Good evening, everyone. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information England Regulation 2012, other people may film, record, tweet, or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the council's control. So welcome to this cabinet meeting of the 17th of October 2019. First, we start with item one, which is apologies. We have apologies from Councillor Rawlings. Do we have, I don't think we have any other. Everyone else is here. So welcome to everyone else. Item two, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Do we have any items that anyone wishes to declare or needs to declare? No, we don't. Thank you very much. That means we're on to item three, which is the leader's announcements. I do not have any announcements to make this evening. So that leads us on to item four, which is the minutes of the previous meeting. Is everyone happy with the content of the minutes?
Yep.
Everyone happy? Approval? Yep. Minutes approved. Thank you very much. And finally, that leads on to item five, which questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. There have been no questions submitted, so in which case we move straight on to item six, which is the draft Charnwood Local Plan 2019-36, which has a scrutiny commission report. So I invite Councillor Rattray to the table to present the scrutiny commission report. I think you're here for quite a while now, aren't you? So you may as well just... Okay, I will pass...
Okay, so if I can just go through what happened from Scrutiny Commission. So following discussions and questions of the lead member and lead officer, the Commission supports the recommendations as set out in the report of the Head of Planning and Regulatory Services. The Commission was satisfied that the publication of the draft local plan and its supporting documents for consultation is required to enable necessary development in Charnwood. During the discussion, the Commission raised concerns regarding further scrutiny following the consultation. As the date of the consultation had moved back slightly, this has meant that the result of the consultation would not be ready in time for the Housing and Planning Scrutiny Committee. It was agreed that either a new meeting of the Housing and Planning Scrutiny Committee would be scheduled or that it would come back to Scrutiny Commission. The Commission also sought assurances on cross-border collaborations and engagements with neighbouring authorities, questioned how the new plan supported the Council's target of carbon neutrality by 2030, raised concerns over the appropriate infrastructure being in place to support additional housing, and sought assurances that Section 106 agreements were more substantial than historic agreements, which weren't always supported by specific trigger points for developers. The Commission raised concerns over why Loughborough and Shepshed had been prioritised for regeneration and why Syston and Burster with the same settlement status as Shepshed were not being supported. Rural areas were also discussed as requiring help. The Commission was satisfied with the information given by the lead member and lead officer and supported the recommendations set out in the report. The Cabinet's consideration of the Commission's views and recommendations was welcomed as part of the decision-making process. If anyone's got any further questions about the discussions, then feel free to ask.
Thank you very much, Councillor Rattray. Are there any questions of clarity or further information that anyone wishes to ask? See, I think that was a pretty thorough report, so thank you very much for that. Just to say thank you very much in particular, I know, for the Commission on this one. It's quite a substantial report and obviously requires a huge amount of reading to actually get the most out of it. But I think some of the comments that I know have been fed back are actually that it was a very easy report to read, and as a result, actually, I think everyone's managed to get the most out of it. So thank you very much for your comments. I think what we'll do now is probably go on to the main item. So if you want to, by all means, take a seat and get ready for the next one. Thank you very much. So can I now invite Richard Bennett, who's our Head of Planning and Regeneration, and Claire Clark also, who's from our Plans and Policies and Placemaking Group Leader, who will come to the table and who will hopefully be able to answer any questions. So... as everyone aware, everyone's had a chance to read the paper in advance, so we're going to go straight into questions and discussion on the report. So can I start off by asking Councillor Hunt to open with a short statement about the report?
Thank you very much, Leader. The purpose of this item today is to gain agreement to go forward to the next consultation stage. There have already been two consultation stages, first looking at the scope for the plan of the local plan in 2016 and a consultation on the key issues and options in April 2018 in the document Towards a Local Plan for Charnwood. The next stage of the process is to seek opinion on the draft local plan before reviewing, investigating and evaluating the responses to create a final version for the final consultation process and submission. The draft document before you will replace the core strategy 2015 and the SAVE policies from the local plan of 2004. It therefore brings together our vision for Charnwood to 2036 and how this will be achieved. As we know, we do need to maintain our five-year housing land supply in order to keep control of our development in our area. Our strategy is therefore to keep a low growth, but be flexible on the approach and supply of housing land to meet future changes. Broadly speaking, our preferred development strategy is an urban concentration and intensification strategy, with some growth dispersed to other areas of the borough. We focus housing and employment at the edge of Leicester, propose managed growth in Loughborough, some growth in Shepshed, and smaller scale growth to the service centres and other settlements. We are supporting the county-wide strategic growth plan and have taken this into consideration, in particular with the formation of an international gateway which includes Shepshed. The site selection process can be gone through in more detail, but there was a set criteria which helped the council to determine which sites should be put forward. Housing will often be allocated with employment land to support our economic success and reduce, where possible, travel to work routes to help the environment. To help support our towns, particularly Loughborough, we will look to develop housing in already existing buildings and brownfield sites. 37 local plan policies set out what we want to achieve and the standards we expect from development. They cover everything from the size and type of housing, where it will be, what environmental parameters we wish to meet, where employment will be, our proposals for regeneration of certain areas, and the supporting policies that protect and maintain what we currently have, from rural areas to areas of separation to areas of houses of multiple occupation. This type of plan is always a difficult task to achieve, and many differing opinions will be offered in response. However, with the plan, we can clearly see that the plan builds on previous plans, papers and consultations, has a clear criteria and reasoning behind particular sites and land uses, and is thoughtful in its approach to future generations and protecting the heritage and environmental fabric of our borough. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the officers and staff who've worked hard to bring this plan together, gathering evidence and bringing together a comprehensive document that is easy to reference and to understand. And, of course, to my predecessor, Eric Vardy, who worked hard for many years as the lead member in this role. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Hunt. That's an extraordinarily thorough introduction, so thank you very much for that. Councillor Barclay.
Yes. The plan makes sense. And it's very readable and logical, which is not something I always attribute to planning, but well done. We've maintained our five-year supply of land by, in some areas, granting planning permission outside that which was identified in the core strategy. And there are now some more houses being allocated to those areas. Are these additional houses really necessary in those areas? These areas, some of them feel as though they've already taken their share and now they're being hit again.
Good evening. The reason we had the five-year supply ad hoc developments that we did was because the sustainable urban extensions that we planned for through this core strategy didn't deliver at the rate we anticipated. But without the developments that we had during that period, the ad hoc developments that we permitted, we would now be planning for more homes than we are. So the scale of the challenge that we would have ahead of us would be greater. So I suppose that partly answers your question. The other aspect is around the strategy and the reason for then for the scale of homes that we do need to plan for. Why are they being directed in some cases to the service centres and other settlements? And we did look at a number of options in coming to this preferred option that we're presenting today. And one of the things that we were looking at was the environmental impacts of concentrating growth only in the urban areas, but also the risk that brings in terms of delivery, as we've seen ourselves from the sustainable urban extension focus. So the strategy is designed to relieve the environmental impacts that we could see if we concentrated growth too greatly, and to increase the deliverability of the strategy overall by having a diversity of sites in terms of location and size.
Just one further question. I mean, the plan itself, actually, although we're looking over the period 2019 to 36 to build 18,300 houses, to be found is 5,900, but that also includes an allowance of 1,400. Am I right there? Yeah. So it's not quite as daunting as it may at first appear. There is quite a lot of our housing identified. Will this plan really maintain our five-year supply? Do you think... I take on board what you said. The reason why you're spreading it further out is to make it more deliverable to maintain our five-year supply. But is it, are you confident that will be achieved?
I think the first thing to say on five-year supply is there's no guarantees, but we think that this strategy creates a good variety of sites that will help us with that. We've planned for more than the exact need. So the exact need is the 5,930, I think, off the top of my head. And then we've added in this flexibility of the 1,400, and that's really important because if things don't happen as we anticipate, that provides that flexibility. But this is a consultation, and so there's really an opportunity for people to have a look at that and see whether or not that level of flexibility really does protect us in terms of five-year supply going forward.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. I got in there because my question follows on from Councillor Barclay. You've answered the question about how robust the five-year supply is. And the reason I'm asking is because, as you know, in my particular area, we are perpetually challenged by developers. And one of their issues is always the five-year supply. So whilst you can't guarantee it, are you fairly, what's the word?
Bullish.
Confident, yes. Bullish, confident that your methodology is correct in making sure that five-year supply. I understand the flexibility of sites. What I'm asking is that is your evidence about sustainability and flood risk, etc., which is protecting rural areas, is that going to be robust enough not to open ourselves up to more challenges all the time?
The approach that we've gone about the draft local plan is to learn the lessons, I think, from the core strategy. So from that point of view, I'm much more confident that we can maintain a five-year supply with this type of strategy. In terms of the robustness of our evidence, there's an awful lot of evidence that underpins the document that's in front of you and that underpins the sustainability appraisal as well, that's a background paper. And that certainly has provided us with a very robust basis on which to select sites. But there are always opportunities to on how far down you go in terms of compromising. We think we've drawn a rational process up to identify the best sites, but that's what this consultation will be about, is that opportunity to challenge us. But yes, I certainly think I've got more confidence than under the previous strategy.
Thank you.
Councillor Boland.
Thank you very much. My question really is about, well, I guess this would apply to any of the settlement areas, but thinking specifically about the smaller other settlements. Whilst I'm sure no one would welcome with open arms the additional housing in some of the smaller villages, if they are there and if we get to a point where they are built, have we taken into account affordable housing needs? Are there any way we can give priority to younger people in our villages? Because, again, whilst I accept the residents initially don't want those things, if they have to be built, is there then scope actually for that to benefit young people and people trying to get on the housing ladder locally in our villages?
Thank you. Yeah, we've there's a policy set out in the draft local plan which looks to achieve 30% affordable housing on all sites. And what we do know about sites in the more rural areas, particularly those other settlements, is that the viability is much much better in those locations because the value of the land is higher, and therefore achieving that is much more likely to happen actually than a site that's perhaps in an urban area with other issues that the site needs to deal with. So that's certainly something that's been on our minds, the needs of both younger people and older people in our community and bringing these houses forward. The other thing to mention is that we have a rural exception sites policy. So for those communities that aren't seeing market housing being directed towards them, there's that opportunity to look for local need focused affordable houses as an exception to the rule, which then gives us more powers around that. I think the last thing to mention is neighbourhood plans. And that's a real opportunity actually for a community to have a look at the housing needs of their settlement and see how they want to plan for that going forward.
Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Leader. I've got a couple of questions, but I'll ask. The first one is about the hierarchy on pages 49 to 50. I think I'm struggling to understand how some of those villages have been put into some of those categories. So have you got the actual specific breakdown of what a place needs to have for them to fit into whatever category? Is my first question, please.
Yeah, we've undertaken a settlement hierarchy assessment, and that was consulted on last year and will be consulted on again as part of this process. The descriptions in the hierarchy on page 49 describes in broad terms what we're looking for, but there is a set of criteria and a table with ticks and crosses against each of those services. So, for instance, in our other settlements, there were four, I'm trying to find the right word, essential services that we were looking for as part of those settlements in order to identify them as another settlement as opposed to a small village or hamlet. So that was around broadband, primary school, shop. I can't remember the last one, but there is criteria that we're setting out. So if you meet two of those essential services, then you get categorised, if you like, as an other settlement. And it's really about being able to meet some of your needs in the village. That's the bar we're setting. When you move up the hierarchy, obviously we're looking for more of your needs to be able to be met on a day-to-day basis within your settlement. So a service centre, we're looking for a range of services that meet most of your day-to-day needs. We don't anticipate you're going to do your full shop in a service centre, but you would be able to get enough for a meal for that evening and be able to access a doctor's and a school and those key services that you would anticipate. And again, as you go up the hierarchy, the choice of services should increase within an urban settlement. And by the time you get to an urban centre, really there should be nothing you need on a day-to-day basis that you can't get within that settlement.
Thank you. Can I just ask my second question? Thank you. The other one is about, obviously, promotion of this. I mean, as councillors, obviously parish councils, people like that are going to read the whole document and make their response that. But I'm just thinking about residents to try and engage them a little bit more. It's quite a big document, and I don't think many residents are going to be able to understand it or read through the whole lot and really get a grip to what. So is there going to be anything, a shorter version, just that we can send out to residents to try and get them to engage with it a little bit more?
Yes, our intention is to do that. We intend to use the website to provide a very overarching summary of what's in the document, and obviously the map is actually quite accessible and is a good way to access this document, actually, because you can quite quickly see what's going on in your area and then go and find the policies that that relate to that. Our intention is to have two sets of display boards that we'll have one in at the council throughout the consultation and one that will be roaming between Shepshed and Syston. And then officers will be going with those on certain dates and being available for questions and answers. We've also prepared a poster to give out to groups that we're aware of, not just through our own consultation database, but through those that are in contact with the council as a whole, and our intention is to provide a summary that people can take away from the exhibitions or that they can access from the website if that's how they'd like to access the information.
Thanks a lot. Councillor Smidovich.
Thank you. Two points I'd like to make. The first one, just to express my concern about the historic environment, and I'd like to come and see you separately about that to get a list. I'm not expecting you to come up with a whole list of places tonight, but I do have some questions around that. But particularly, I know I'm going to get questioned quite a lot about the air quality, and it points out under the air quality that Loughborough, Syston and Mount Sorrel suffer from poor air quality. Now, we're doing a lot in regulatory services for monitoring all of that. So my question is, we've got a sports university dedicated to sports, and we've had considerable work done by residents on the environmental agency and what they particularly do. So is there going to be any Section 106 money or anything coming through as contributions for an even more refined way of measuring particulates and those, the more detailed, you know, the tinier thing, the tinier monitors that we don't generally use in our borough. So it's more refined equipment. Is there going to be anything available, bearing in mind that's been identified?
Richard Bennett, Head of Planning. That's an interesting question. Section 106, members will be aware, is a legal means of securing planning benefits from development, and there's very strict tests around the way that you use them. You have to be able to show that the development has a direct link to the benefit that you're requesting. So the answer is there isn't an answer at the moment. It depends on the developments that are coming forward within those areas that have a particular air quality issue and whether there's a direct relationship between those developments and the air quality. So potentially there is an opportunity to explore that, but it's I can't give you a definite answer because each application is considered on its own merits, of course.
Could I be reassured then, and could residents be reassured that you will make a note of that where there are those developments coming up?
Through you, Leader, through the planning process, we're aware of where the air quality management areas are in the borough, and that's something that comes up when applications are submitted within those areas. So we will, that will flag when we're dealing with those applications. We are looking to do an air quality study after this consultation as well to develop our understanding of the scale of the problem. So potentially that could lead into some further policy making down the line to assist us with this agenda.
Councillor Mercer.
Thank you, Leader. Two questions. The first is, you say that it's likely that there will be a delay in publishing the plan. Does this mean it's also likely that there's going to be a bit of a free-for-all from developers?
Could I just clarify where we say it's likely there'll be a delay? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Through you, leader, we found the the reference in the report now. So this is the risk management area of Part A of the report. What we're identifying is that if there is any delay in publishing the local plan for whatever reason, and that may be for reasons that are outside the council's control, then that could result in consequential delays in the process of bringing forward the core strategy, which could mean that the core strategy becomes out of date in terms of the planning rules. If it's more than 5 years old, then it can be considered to be out of date, and that means that the weight that can be given to its policies may be less, which in turn means that we could revert to a presumption in favour of sustainable development, leading to potentially a lack of control. So that's the risk that we're looking at there. So it's not that a delay is going to happen, it's just that there is a risk that it might, because of factors outside of our control, and the consequences are potentially serious.
And this is the price you pay for making us read the reports beforehand. We can think of questions. Page 126. In climate change, you say that renewable energy will be encouraged, and suggest that medium-sized wind turbines can be put up in the Wolds and Reek Valley, up to 80 metres, which is a bit shorter than the big ones we see going up. But they produce a lot less energy. Do you envisage that enough wind turbines would be erected to offset the amount of energy being used by all of the new houses that we are building?
We don't anticipate that. This is very much an encouraging policy. This is about providing a positive environment for somebody to come to us with a proposal for wind turbines. So this is something that we'll react to as we receive planning applications, if you like. So we're creating a positive framework to receive those types of applications. But the chances of us receiving the scale that would be required to offset all of the homes is completely out of our control. So that's really whether or not those proposals come forward.
Thanks a lot. Can I have a couple of questions myself? Really a couple of questions about the original ONS description of the Charnwood borough itself. Obviously, the datum figure I think that was taken was 2017, which quoted a population of just over 180,000. Since then, we'll no doubt probably have build a couple of thousand homes and maybe inherited another 5,000-6,000 residents on top of that. On top of that, as far as I understand, we'd probably have to add in the 17,000 students at Loughborough University because they're not included in the ONS figures. Is that correct?
Not entirely sure, but I believe they are taken into account. I'd have to check that, I'm afraid. I don't know off the top of my head. They're certainly counted in terms of housing numbers. So they're part of the housing need that we are meeting.
Okay, because I've asked the question, I think, a couple of times about the quoted figure for the population of Charnwood, whether it does actually include students, and it would be helpful to finally nail down whether it does or not. My suspicion is it might not. And I have various suspicions as to why that might be the case based on other criteria. But it might be helpful to actually know whether the borough's effective size, the population that we're servicing, is actually closer to 200,000 people rather than actually 180,000, because obviously that has quite an impact on all sorts of service provision. The other question I'd probably have would be about self-build, which is an area that I have to say I'm particularly enthusiastic about, and very good to actually see a section in the plan specifically on that. And I think my question probably would be one about the ratios. So the way it's described, we're rounding down, so 20 properties, if there are only 19 being proposed, then actually there would be zero self-builds, but if there are 20, then there would be one self-build. And I think my question would be, is that rounding down a recognised way of calculating everywhere, or is that something that we've actually proposed just in Charnwood?
I'd have to check what others have done, but it's certainly not been driven by best practice, which I think is what you're asking, really. So that's a local decision, and that's something we could certainly look at through the consultation, is whether that's appropriate. It's a new policy, so I suppose we're probably erring on the side of caution in terms of what we're requiring.
I appreciate that. I just come from sort of experience historically of sometimes development suddenly losing one housing unit during the application process to avoid, avoiding affordable homes. So maybe we can just come up with something that's maybe slightly more a sliding scale rather than maybe a direct sort of rounding down. Are there any other questions that anyone wishes to ask? Because I have a sort of final point before I'm going to hand back to Councillor Hunt. Is there anything that anyone else wishes to ask about this as a report? So my point, my final question, I think, is probably actually about consultation responses. So we're obviously, you know, incredibly keen for everyone to actually respond, and I appreciate those responding are going to be everyone from residents all the way up through to residents groups, parish councils, town councils, developers. Everyone will have an opinion on this as a document, and obviously the way that the document is set out, it provides some framework for asking questions. What do people think about particular issues, certainly chapter by chapter, and I think that's very clearly done. Thank you very much for that. I think it's really understanding the weight of the consultation, because certainly clearly planning is a very complicated process. Everyone thinks it's not. But it is always, we always internally within the council always describe it as semi-judicial, and I think there's a good reason for describing it that way, because of the way that the challenges can come through if decisions are not built around evidence and due process. And it's important as a result that when people are actually looking to respond to this as a document, that they actually understand that this is almost like challenging a murder trial, in the sense that you have to have good reason to actually put a case forward that's maybe different to the one that's been put forward in court. So when you're producing the documentation, Councillor Taylor made reference to additional documents that could actually help residents. Are we also producing a section within those documents explaining how people respond to consultations, and maybe helping them to actually understand how critical some of the evidence needs to be to actually for them to actually respond effectively, rather than just "I have a thought." It needs to be a little bit more than just that. And I just wondered how we were actually going to help residents in particular, because I suspect probably parish councils and developers will be hiring planners to actually put those arguments for them. But for residents in particular, it's quite important to actually understand how to effectively respond to this consultation.
That's a really important point. I think the first thing I would say is that this is an informal consultation, so we're not in a statutory consultation environment, which is helpful because it means there's more opportunity for discussion, if you like, and actually backing up your comments with detailed evidence isn't required at this stage. So we really are welcoming comments on the process we've been through and the thoughts that we've, you know, the moments where we've made decisions as we've gone down a particular route. Were they the right decisions? Have we weighed things up appropriately? We're holding a briefing for parish councils and neighbourhood plan groups on Monday, and we'll try and help them with that process of how to make their comments. But in terms of the wider public, we can certainly provide some advice. I think part of including questions through the document is to try and give people an idea where there is actually an opportunity for discussion. So there are certain things that are set out in national policy, and there's no point asking an opinion about that because that we have to work with. So we've tried to put questions in that direct people to where we've got a choice and where we think we would genuinely find feedback helpful. But we can certainly provide more advice around that in the summary document that we do and at the events that we do and provide some guidance notes. I think that would be really helpful.
Thank you very much for that. That's genuinely actually quite helpful in its own right, because I just actually understanding the difference between informal and statutory I think is actually quite helpful in its own right. Are there any other questions before we pass back to Councillor Hunt? No, there aren't. So, Councillor Hunt, if you'd like to make a proposition.
Thank you very much, Leader. So thank you very much for all those questions and those replies. Thank you. The purpose of this document, as I say, is to start off the consultation process, the third part of the consultation, if you like. If you agree it tonight, it's very likely to commence on the 4th of November and end on round about the 16th of December. So I move recommendations 1 to 4 for reasons 1 to 4 on page 13 of the paper.
Very much. Can I ask Councillor Barclay to second?
I'm happy to second that, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? And that's everyone. Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Richard, and thank you very much, Claire. We're now moving on to item 7, which is the funding bid for Shepshed Public Realm Improvements. We have a scrutiny commission report on this one, so if I can ask Councillor Rattray to come to the table to present the Scrutiny Commission's thoughts.
Hi, everyone, again. So if I just give you feedback from the Scrutiny Commission on the funding bid for Shepshed. So following discussion and questions for the lead member and lead officer, the Commission supports the recommendations as set out in the report of the Head of Planning and Regulatory Services. The Commission was satisfied that the bid to secure funding, which would enable public realm improvements in the centre of Shepshed, was necessary. During discussion, questions were asked as to why only Shepshed was included in the funding bid. The Commission were informed that the project drew evidence from the Shepshed Regeneration Master Plan and that already assigned capital funds would be match funded through the bid. The Commission asked that the planning service be mindful of the impact development in the town centre would have on the residents, given the work to the A512 and roundabout at junction 23 of the motorway, and that timings of work, communication with Shepshed residents would be important considerations. If you have any further questions, please let me know.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of clarity or further information that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Rattray? No, there aren't. Obviously, a very, very thorough report. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You're welcome to prepare yourself for the next one. So, if I could ask Richard Bennett, our Head of Planning and Regeneration, come back to the table. And what I'm now going to do is open up to Cabinet for any questions or statement. I'm going to get Councillor Hunt to start off with. And then if there are any questions that anyone wishes to ask, by all means, they can do at that point.
Thank you very much, Leader. We'd like authority to bid for £600,000 for public realm improvements in Shepshed. We already have money set aside, but we wish to maximise the potential for Shepshed by looking for matched funding from the business rates pool. We have plans for Shepshed as set out in the Shepshed Town Master Plan, but these have stalled at present. The cash injection that this bid would bring would allow us to be ambitious for the town and its residents, which I'm very, very keen to do. So really the purpose of this document is, because it's over £200,000, we need authority from Cabinet in order to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a great opportunity to actually bid for quite a significant amount of money for Shepshed. So I think it's good news. Are there any questions or any information at all that anyone wishes to ask? No, I think it's obviously a very, very thorough report. So in which case, can I pass back to Councillor Hunt to make a proposition?
Thank you very much, Leader. So I move recommendation that Cabinet approves the preparation and submission of a business case bid to the LEP for funding of £600,000 to comply with, and the reason rather, is to comply with section 8.3 paragraph 7 of the Council's Constitution, which limits delegated officer authority for preparation of funding bids to a maximum of £200,000. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Councillor Taylor, would you like to second?
I'll second that, Leader.
Thank you very much. Can I see all those in favour? And that's everyone. Thank you very much and good luck. Good luck for the bid. Thank you very much, Richard. So now moving on to item 8, which is the Transformation Programme Resourcing for Mobilisation. So, Councillor, if I could ask you to come back to the table for your third and final Scrutiny Commission report for this evening. Now, I actually sat in front of you for this one, so it was quite a scary event. And I have to say, it's the first time I've ever actually been quizzed about a scrutiny process, and having heard about them and obviously seen the presentations, it was actually really, really quite good to go and experience one for myself. Very, very thorough questions. So I'll now pass back to you for your summary of the meeting.
Okay, so if I just take you through the feedback from Scrutiny Commission on the Transformation Programme. So following the discussion and questions of the leader and lead officer, the Commission supports the recommendations as set out in the report of the Chief Executive. The Commission was satisfied that funding from the Reinvestment Reserve to facilitate the mobilisation of the Council's Transformation Programme was appropriate and would provide improvements to the Council. During discussions and questions to the leader and lead officer, the Commission sought clarification on where the sum of £220,000 had come from and whether there was a breakdown of how it would be spent. The lead officer explained that the figure of £220,000 was based on projections from the Business Rates Retention Scheme, which had been designated for digital transformation and town centre support. The Commission supports the need to move to more digital services to support our residents, but raised concerns that all residents would still be able to access help. It was confirmed that anyone not comfortable with digital services and support would still be able to attend Southfields and receive face-to-face support. During discussion, questions were raised as to whether skills would need to be procured outside of our current remit. It was confirmed that where the existing board did not have the capacity to provide the necessary skill set, then there would be an opportunity to recruit externally. Overall, the Commission supports the move to digitisation and was happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of clarity or further information anyone wishes to ask? Can I just thank you again on behalf of Cabinet. Having seen for myself precisely the sort of depth and the level of questioning, really, really helpful. I think three times this evening, having another set of eyes looking at the same papers has proved to be invaluable. A lot of the questions and a lot of the points raised quite clearly have been very relevant to the discussion. And have added to the quality and the improvement, I think, probably of the paper. So if you could please pass on our thanks to your commission. But again, thank you very much for coming this evening. Thank you. So we're now going to have an opportunity to ask any questions. This is actually a paper being proposed by me, so I'm not going to say a great deal more on the basis of what you've actually read in the report. It is about using £220,000 to be able to take from the reserve account to use and facilitate for future transformation work. The money itself is coming from income expected this year from the 75% business rate retention, so the amount is covered. Are there any questions for Simon Jackson, who's obviously sitting beside me, who is the Strategic Director of Corporate Services? This paper comes under you, Simon, but also obviously under the Chief Exec, who can't be with us this evening. But if there are any questions, I know either Simon or myself will be able to answer them. Councillor Smidovich.
Yes, thank you, Leader. I'm really supporting this. I'm really enthused about this and a potentially very streamlined Charnwood Borough Council, but I know that's in the future. However, when are we going to get started on this bit? How quickly?
On the transformation.
So
the transformation programme will be coming forward pretty soon. And there will be further items, no doubt, coming to Cabinet before, I suspect, probably this side of Christmas. So hopefully there'll be more for people to see as we start working through it. Are there any further questions? Otherwise, if we can go to the recommendation in that case, that £220,000 is made available from the reinvestment reserve to fund the initial phase of the Council's transformation programme, for the reason to ensure that the Investor Safe funding is available for the acquisition of capacity, skills and technical support required for the development and implementation of the Council's transformation programme, and thereby enabling the programme to contribute to the financial challenges outlined in the extant MTFS. So I'd like to propose that, and Councillor Smidovich, would you like to second?
Yes, I certainly will second that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Right, we now move on to item 9, which is the legal services restructure. So on this paper, which all of you have had the opportunity to read, Adrian Ward, who's our head of strategic support, is able to assist with any questions. Councillor Poland, is there anything that you wish to actually state in addition to what's in the report, or any questions that you'd like to ask?
Thank you, Leader. Not really a huge amount from what's in the report. I mean, the report says the reason it's here is because it affects more than five posts, which it does. The reason behind the restructure is to try and make legal services better placed to deal with the requests and demands that councillors have today, so predominantly more enforcement and that side of things, rather than what we've done in the past. This isn't about adding resources or taking away resources. It's about using what resources we have now in a way that meets the need we have today.
Thank you very much, Councillor Poland. Are there any questions that anyone wish to ask? Councillor Smidovich.
Afraid so. thank you, James. What will we be able to do now that we haven't been doing already with enforcement?
I think that's a question for Adrian Ward.
Thank you, Leader. I think what the recommendations within the report are seeking to do is to strengthen the qualified solicitor level of staffing within the team. We are looking to beef up the qualified experience for litigation work, which includes enforcement work. So at the moment, we are having to outsource some of our more complex enforcement casework to external legal advisors. We are hoping that if we can advertise and recruit to the proposed new posts, we will be able to deal with more of that work in-house. And it's always cheaper to deal with that sort of thing in-house than externally. I was actually attended court myself recently, and the county court judge made a point of saying that the legal costs we were seeking to recover based on our internal charge-out rates were sort of at least half of what external legal fees would be, so he was pleasantly surprised. So I think it's more a question of trying to do more in-house than externally and therefore hopefully delivering some value for money. But within the report, and I think Councillor Poland alluded to this, if the intention of the council is to carry on increasing the level of enforcement work, we may still struggle in terms of capacity to be able to resource that work moving forward. This is just allocating the existing budget we have in the best way we possibly can, really. It doesn't guarantee that this is the fix and that we will be able to resource an increasing demand for enforcement work if that's the route that the Council and Cabinet want to take in future.
Councillor Baker, I've understood what you've just said, but your report suggests that by beefing up our in-house resources, then we could potentially and theoretically speed up some of our enforcement processes. Is that correct?
I don't necessarily know, leader, that it would speed up the process, is because some enforcement cases can be extremely complex and involve various levels of legal action before you get to the final stage where potentially you're in court looking for financial penalties or some other form of, in inverted commas, punishment for the people that have offended. But what it will do, I think it's always easier for internal client departments to deal with internal legal staff, because you can pop round the corner and speak to them rather than having to contact them by phone or email. So potentially it will make things easier. I'm not sure it will. It will speed up the process, because the legal process is the legal process, unfortunately.
Thank you. I understand that. What I was looking for is that there is a better, easier method of communication once you've got things in-house.
OK, some nodding going on. And just for clarity, Adrian was appearing in court on behalf of the council. Well, yes, precisely. Anyway, just to make sure it's on record. So, Councillor Poland, can I ask you to make a proposition?
Indeed, Leader. Can I please move recommendations 1 to 5 on page 191 for reasons 1 to 5 on the next page 192?
Thank you very much. Can I ask Councillor Poland?
Yes, thank you, Leader. I'm happy to second that.
Can I see all of those in favour? And that's everyone. Thank you very much, and thank you very much to everyone for attending this evening and for all the questions in depth. Good night.